these are some of the wealthiest people in the country, if not the world. And they were all standing right behind Donald Trump on inaugural day, or just about. Here is first Palantir CEO Peter Thiel, the ringleader of the PayPal mafia, as it's called sometimes. This is just him in April of 2024. Just at a Mercatus Center event. Mercatus Center is the sort of libertarian think tank, or one of those. Here he is.
Sort of, you know, one way to think of the Weimar period was, I don't know, it's like the dwarves in Moria, where they dwelled too deep, and you know, finally they awakened the nameless terror of the Balrog. But I think there are, and again, I don't think we're ever in a cyclical world, but there are certainly certain parallels in the U.S. in the 2020s to Germany in the 1920s, where liberalism is exhausted. One suspects that democracy, whatever that means, is exhausted, and we have to ask some questions very far outside the Overton window.
Okay, so there he is saying, like, we're like Weimar Germany, and democracy, whatever that means, has been exhausted. I want to get back. Is that notion of, like, whatever democracy means, who could tell?
Nothing has meaning.
Is interesting. Now, for people who don't know any history after Weimar, we saw the rise of Nazism. And Overton window means, like, we got to widen the scope of what we contemplate as being normal. Here is Mark Andreessen, the guy who created Netscape, another tech billionaire. This is him on the Chris Williamson YouTube channel. This is where and you will recognize this Gil from this guy. Obviously, reads some Curtis Yarvin or talks to him directly. But here he is.
Talking about this too, right? Which is like, okay, how do we actually like redo the system is, of course, much harder. The other lens on this that I think about a lot is Curtis Yarvin, who's also a good friend of mine. And the way he describes the American system that's running the people, the way he describes it is we are living under FDR's personal monarchy 80 years later without FDR. Right. And the reason he describes it, he says, look, when before FDR, the federal government was actually very small, like the tax rates were like super low. The federal government didn't do very much. The FDR dramatically, by orders of magnitude, increased the size and scope of the federal government. He did that for two reasons. One was the New Deal. And then the other was World War II. And so the federal government that Franklin Roosevelt left behind in 1945 when he passed away was the government that he had built, which he had run the entire time from 1933 to 1945 himself, in which he had staffed himself and he had overseen himself and everything. And he built this basically this giant structure. And as Curtis basically says, as long as you had FDR running that, it could run really well. And, you know, we won World War II and saved the free world and like it worked and pulled the U.S. out of depression. Like the whole thing worked and it was great. But if you let an organization of that size and scope run without its founder CEO for 80 years, you end up with what we have now, which is just like basically an out of control bureaucracy, like an out of control system.
All right. So I just wanted to lay that out. And there was also one where Andreessen, I think, was on Joe Rogan, saying that FDR, Hitler, whatever, people were really in control of stuff. All right. So with that said, he cites Curtis Yarvin. Who is Curtis Yarvin?
Curtis Yarvin is a software programmer from San Francisco who in the early 2000s started writing a weird blog under the name Minchus Moldbug. And in that blog, he outlined a lot of these ideas for getting rid of democracy in favor of a corporate monarch or dictator and running territories instead of by government, by corporation. For example, his idea for San Francisco was something called FriskCorp, which would be a corporate-run San Francisco where you need a special card to swipe it and swipe out. At every moment in FriskCorp, you're under constant and total surveillance. They know every single thing you're doing, even if you're in your house. And this is what guarantees the safety of the populace. Of course, he's only reinvented the totalitarian government of Orwell's 1984. But one thing you find with these guys is they think all the villains of science fiction and speculative fiction are the heroes, and they seek to emulate them. So I often hear from people that this is Snow Crash, this is Parable of the Sower, etc. They're all right. And that's the basic idea here. You get a lot of gobbledygook from guys who think they're really smart, but are actually saying really dumb and dangerous things. And now are, sadly, very close. They're in control of the federal government in Washington. And that's what's kind of shocking about it. When I started this work last year, I felt like a lot of people, even people I've known a long time, viewed it as sort of a conspiracy theory. And, you know, if Kamala had won, I would look like a guy who had way overreacted to a few weirdos in tech. Even billionaires were criticizing me, saying, nobody takes these guys seriously. This is just a journalist trying to be in the New York Times someday. And I wish that had all been true, because what's happening now is even scarier and worse than I thought. And so Yarvin's idea is that Americans have to get over their dictator phobia, he said. And the way that we do that is by installing a CEO to be like the shadow president and to destroy American government from within through something he calls RAGE, R-A-G-E, retire all government employees. And that's very much what you see happening right now through D-O-G-E, DOGE, destruction of government by Elon, in Washington as we speak.
And he lifted it.
I mean, honestly, I think, like, you know, it is you were just ahead of the curve here. Here is New York Times' David Marchese interviewing Curtis Yarvin. And this is the longest interview I've seen with him. And it's about an hour long. And there's sort of two segments. And I was struck by how exactly what you're saying. It's a lot of gobbledygook. And this guy's not that bright. It's fascinating. He's asked, why do you think FDR was a dictator or a CEO or a king, whatever? They play around with these terms as more or less the same type of thing. And he doesn't seem to really have an answer except for a strange anecdote. But let's just listen to this for a minute or two. This is Curtis Yarvin being interviewed at the New York Times. This came out about 3 weeks ago, I guess.
Know Mark Andreessen, and so I sent this piece to Mark Andreessen. And it's an excerpt from the diary of Harold Ickes, who's FDR's Secretary of the Interior. And it's a little diary entry describing a cabinet meeting in 1933. And what happens in this cabinet meeting is that Francis Perkins, who's the Secretary of Labor, comes in to this meeting and is like, here, I have a list of the projects that we're going to do. FDR personally takes this list, looks at the projects in New York, and is like, this is crap, aren't you doing? Like, humiliates Francis Perkins in the Oval Office or wherever they're having their cabinet meeting. And then at the end of the thing, it's like everybody agrees that the bill will be fixed and then passed through Congress. This is just a picture of FDR acting like a CEO. And so, you know, the question of, was FDR a dictator? What does it mean to be a dictator? What does this pejorative word mean? I don't know. What I know is that Americans of all stripes, Democrats, Republicans, and everyone, you know, except for a few right-wing Republicans, basically revere FDR. And FDR ran the New Deal like a startup.
Okay. Okay. I don't know, honestly, like
a startup.
I'm you know, waiting. Like, what made FDR a dictator in your mind? And he was rude to Frances Perkins the first time she came in, and everybody liked FDR. He ran it like a startup.
Well, she was a DEI hire.
What's going on here? Like, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time, sort of diagnosing Curtis Yarvin. Although I did note that it seems like every reactionary wears a leather coat on some level. Like, it's their way of saying, I want to take us back to, the 14th century, but I'm wearing a leather coat, so this has got to be all new and rebellious. But, there doesn't seem to be a there.
Yeah, well, these are people who are used to talking in rooms where nobody challenges them. So your stupidity gets accepted and you get more competent in it. The other way to look at it is, this is a disinformation for dumb people who don't know anything about what he's talking about. And so his cherry-picked anecdotes are used to convince all of these young wannabes in Silicon Valley that, oh, wow, it was a dictatorship, etc. There's one quote Yarvin has from a few years back where he says, you can go into a bar and say, you know, I think the British should have won the American Revolution. And people will say, yeah, that's cool. We'll try that shit in Boston or somewhere where actually people know about some of these things and see what happens in a bar. So this is a guy who's sort of making up this universe observers from cherry-picked anecdotes and trying to prove this point. I mean, if I worked in government. I come from government. I spent a lot of my career there. I worked for Governor Jerry Brown. I worked for Senator Dianne Feinstein, when she was chair of the Intelligence Committee. I come from mainstream Democratic politics. I'm not on the far left. And everything in politics is a negotiation. Everything is a test of egos and wills. That's designed that way from the Greeks and the Romans. There's a long history of how this works. There are checks and balances. If Roosevelt had been a dictator, then why did we go and elect a bunch of Republicans who hated his whole project in intervening decades? I mean, it makes no sense, but it's not supposed to. We're not the audience for it. The audience is people who don't know history, who don't know what to think, and might fall prey and victim to this revisionist vision that is only designed to convince them that we're already in a dictatorship. It's just a matter of which dictator you want.
That's what Andreessen was basically saying. We've been living under a dictatorship without the dictator here, and that's why things are going awry on some level 90 years later. I mean, it's insane stuff, and I want to get to the plan. We got a lot of questions about that as well. But just one more thing that strikes me. Because you have delved into his writing, and from what I've read and heard from him speak, the fascinating thing is he is trying, when he responded later in that interview to, like, democracy, he defined it, where you heard Peter Thiel say, whatever that means, he defined it as, you know, a desire for the common good, which is not what democracy is. Democracy is not about, I mean, I think everybody wants that, but democracy is about the participation in the decision making, as opposed to a desire for what the ends is. And I want you to talk about how slippery they are about what democracy is. And because there seems to be, with this sort of cohort of conservative thought, the way they strip this, the way they lay this bare, is it's all sort of like focused on some type of outcome. And they try and, I guess, flatten the differences.
Erase meaning.
Erase the meaning of everything prior to that on some level.
Yeah.
I would add also, he used an example, and I'm sure you've heard him say this, about if, you know, why would we want, you know, Apple's run by a CEO? Could California, the government agency of making computers, make an Apple computer? Of course not. But that's a very, very narrow sort of like, job assignment for government. It's not just we're going to make good computers. There's a whole host of addressing a bunch of different concerns, which is fundamentally about democracy. Will you just talk about that element of it?
Yeah, these guys only view reality through their own lens of tech and wealth and power. Having been in government, you have to view it through the eyes of vast constituencies of people, many of whom have different needs or maybe at cross purposes. Politics is a tough art to master. A lot of good people fail at it. And so when they talk about things like democracy, et cetera, you know, a lot of their problems could be cured by a poli-sci 101 class. You know, the common good through history has come to be defined as something that the public must participate in defining. What they're trying to say is that, well, there were times where there were monarchs or there were dictators, and the common good was defined as whatever they decided it was. And, you know, they claim things worked better or whatever under those systems, which I think history will prove that they don't. So all of this is pointed toward complete ignorance of actual history, of political theory, of how we got to the system that we have, toward a return to something that doesn't work, always gets overthrown, usually through violent revolution or war, and that would only benefit the richest guys in the room, which is them. So I think, you know, if anybody who's familiar with the basics of political science can see the very juvenile and sophomoric mistakes they're making. But again, these are guys who don't get challenged in the rooms that they're in. And even when they get interviewed by, say, the New York Times, it's a pretty softball interview. You know, this is a guy who's called for a dictatorship and laid out a plan that appears to be being followed. And he gets this glow up black and white smoldering photograph in the New York Times. I mean, this is a really bizarre time to be living in. You know, you couldn't get these guys to cover this stuff before 3 days before the inauguration, they dropped the Yarvin interview. And believe me, I was talking to people and urging them to do this. And again, I was out there in weirdo land, and now we're all in weirdo land. So
yes,
but they covered Project 2025, right? I mean, and that I guess is like
Before we get to Project 2025, will you just lay out the plan for us? Because then I think it overlays over Project 2025.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the plan in the blueprint that Yarvin had. Well, in 2022, Yarvin updated his plan to a second Trump administration, and it's called the Butterfly Revolution. He did this on his Substack, and he said that the basic plan would be, and he said, oh, this is all imaginary scenario, a harmless thought exercise, but the idea would be to install a CEO-style dictator while keeping Trump as the figurehead, to then purge career government employees, basically carry out raids, retire all government employees, to weaken these institutions, get rid of any people who are loyal to democracy, replace them with loyal ninjas who would answer to the CEO dictator, not to the democratic process or to Congress or anybody like that. Then start centralizing executive power under the executive branch, rebutting the courts, refusing to go along with the laws, just challenging every aspect of the system to break it. And then, and also bypassing congressional oversight, and then use this new centralized power to start seizing the other centers of power in society, media power, academia, establish complete control over the information sphere, because in order to have this experiment last, you have to make sure it controls information, because it needs to control future elections. It does no good if in 2 years we get the Congress back, or in 4 years we get the White House back. So that was the scary vision he laid out in 2022. And as far as I can tell,
that sounds impossible.
Yeah, everything that Musk is doing, again, it could all be a vast coincidence. I'm a skeptical person myself. I'm a journalist. I come from mainstream politics. But it seems to me that they're doing everything on their list so far. And I've come to a point where I'm not going to underestimate these guys anymore. I am going to underestimate all of the people whose job it is to be telling people what's going on. I think if most of the American people knew what was happening right now, they would be very much against it. But
That it's systemic. I mean, that's the thing, is that I think there's this sense out there that like stuff is happening willy nilly. But this is part of a plan, but
no, I mean, that was my question, and it's really just, it's fascinating to see how this pairs with the lack of meaning that they're trying to engender, and the fact that these tech bros have control over our communications platforms, they're able to make that a reality. I mean, everybody's a blue check, and what information is true and what is not. I mean, I think I saw Yarvin saying that this is the prime opportunity for our plan to come into place or go into place, because right now we're in a very irony-pilled or a high irony time, essentially saying that there's such little education that our ideas sound okay. I mean, it's the same with the anti-vax stuff. That's where we're at right now.
Definitely. Everything is considered negotiable, and there's no opposition that's organizing to really counter what these guys are doing. Instead, the Democratic Party's stance seems to be that, well, we're just going to let them do it, as much bad stuff as possible, and everybody will be against it. We're starting to see some people stand up and resist it. We've got people like AOC and others. Jamie Raskin said the other day that they're trying to install a tech monarchy. People are creeping toward it. But I think what people need to understand is that this is not random chaos. This is a strategy, and it's a strategy they've been talking about and writing about and bragging about for years. And once you understand that, then it takes on a different meaning. You can make more sense of what's happening. And basically, we've got an unelected foreign-born billionaire up in our government, destroying it and defying our laws. This is exactly the kind of nightmare our Constitution was designed to prevent. And we need to be very aware of that, because we can stop it, but not if we stay asleep for too long. These guys are trying to do as much damage as they can as quickly as possible, because that's their key to keeping power. And I don't mean keeping power for 4 years. I mean keeping power in general. And to see the Democratic Party largely silent, to see the major media outlets not really getting it, it's pretty scary. That to me is the scariest thing of all. This is an advanced conversation. Catch up, get your pants on, get your boots on, and get out the door. It's time to go. And I don't really see that happening from the party that, again, I worked for very mainstream politicians for most of my career.